immigration has become, in the Trump era, perhaps more than almost any other issue, the dividing line between the two parties.
That's Peter Beinart. He's a contributing editor for The Atlantic and a professor at the CUNY Graduate School of Journalism. He wrote a piece for The Atlantic in 2017 called How the Democrats Lost Their Way on Immigration. It's hard to believe it now, but not too long ago, the Democratic and Republican positions on immigration were practically reversed.
There's a pretty long history in the United States of the Democratic Party, because it's influenced by the labor movement, of being sympathetic to restrictions on immigration because labor unions thought that more low-skilled immigration would reduce wages. And business, which had more influence in the Republican Party, loving immigration. The Wall Street Journal had a position of actually wanting open borders because the more workers, the better it is for business.
And by 2008, the presidential candidates are pretty closely aligned.
Apprehend those who came here illegally to commit crimes.
We simply cannot allow people to pour into the United States undetected, undocumented.
Obama and McCain's views on immigration in 2008 weren't really that different. So it's been relatively recent. And one of the points that I was trying to make in my Atlantic essay was, I think on the left, there's a tendency to look at the Republican Party and think, wow, they've really gone off a cliff. And I actually think they have gone to a really, really disturbing nativist position, but not to be as aware of the ways in which actually the Democratic Party has also shifted its views on immigration just in the opposite direction.
Well, and your point that you make in the Atlantic piece is that some of this is driven by the fact on the Democrat side that after the election of Barack Obama, there was this belief that demographics were destiny and that the growing Latino population was going to give Democrats sort of a permanent hold on political power.
Yes. And you'll remember, Amy, you know, if you go back to the conversations in the Democratic Party in the 80s and 90s, there was all this anxiety about Democrats losing the white working class. And infamously in places like Macomb County, Michigan. But once Obama won and people started to see the demographic shift, that was really largely overtaken by the sense of demographic self-confidence, which was powered partly by the young and the fact that they were more Democratic, but partly by the fact that this increasing Latino population was increasingly Democratic. And so from a political point of view, Democrats focused on maintaining that allegiance and support, which pushed them in a more pro-immigration direction, and felt like, well, we don't need to worry so much if maybe this costs us a bit among a white working class that is declining as a share of the population.
But then 2016 happened.
Right. And of course, you know, Donald Trump did not win the popular vote, and there are all kinds of particular anomalies that happened in that election. But the Democratic Party has, in its understandable desire to be on the right side of the rights of immigrants and on the moral side, I think has had a tendency to not sufficiently take account of what are genuine challenges that immigration poses, not because immigrants are not really, really good people and not because we don't want a lot of them in our country, but that actually there are genuine challenges to a society that takes in a lot of immigrants, especially a lot of low-wage immigrants, and that the Democratic Party has had a tendency, I think, to kind of sweep some of those issues under the rug in the last few years.
The Democratic Party has had a real division on this subject.
Now that is Tom Edsel, author and weekly contributor to the New York Times opinion page.
They clearly have a growing Hispanic population that they do not want to alienate by taking any kind of hardline position. But then there are people like Democratic pollster Strayan Greenberg and others who argue that you have to have some kind of policy, basically that the border must work, and that they are going to lose voters, that a lot of the voters throughout the Midwest who cast the key ballots in losing the Electoral College to Trump were driven by immigration. Immigration was a big issue there. Even though there are very few Hispanics in those communities, these are also areas that are losing young white voters who would be most inclined to support immigration. So the result is that the remaining whites are older and most hostile to immigration. They don't like change.
So over the past 10 years, Democrats have become increasingly confident that Latino voters would come out in droves and support their candidates on Election Day. But the Atlantic's Peter Beinart says they miscalculated. Democrats didn't factor in the fact that demographic shifts of the country came at a cost.
The Democratic Party, and I think I probably fell into this some in my writing too, you know, during the Obama era, came to the view that as the Latino population increased, the Democratic Party, that rising tide would naturally lift the Democratic Party's boat. The problem with that assumption is, as some political scientists have pointed out, it's also possible that as the Latino population increases and anxieties, which are fueled by Fox News and other places about Latinos, increase, that the white population becomes increasingly anti-Latino and more Republican.
To this last theory, Ryan Enos, he's a political researcher at Harvard, he conducted an experiment 6 years ago in parts of Boston that were overwhelmingly liberal and well-off. Using a randomized controlled trial, he paid Spanish-speaking people to ride commuter trains in these white communities every day at the same time for 2 weeks. He wanted to create the appearance that these Spanish-speaking people had moved into the communities.
Before he conducted this experiment, Enos interviewed people on those platforms, and then he interviewed them afterwards.
Tom Edsel again from The New York Times.
All of them in the first survey were very pro-immigration. In the second survey, the commuters who had been exposed over 2 weeks to these Hispanics suddenly turned anti-immigration. They were no longer loyal liberal Democrats on that issue. And that shows how fragile, basically, this upscale support for Democrats is when you get to the point where, to use the cliche, the rubber hits the road.
So when they thought their neighborhoods were going to have people who were speaking Spanish and thus were probably immigrants, they were more supportive of Republican policies on restricting immigration and on English only and things like that.
Yes, they basically switched to the right on immigration issues.
Enos did another experiment in Chicago that Edsel told me about.
Between 2000 and 2004, they tore down lots of the high-rise public housing. Cabrini Green is probably the most famous of those. Interestingly, some of those huge public housing projects were right next to affluent white neighborhoods, Cabrini Green in particular. What he found was that before, in the 2000 election, the whites who lived in these adjoining areas voted in a more conservative direction by about 10 percentage points than whites in the rest of Chicago. After the public housing projects were no longer there, the whites became more liberal and basically voted the same as all other Chicago whites.
And what is the theory behind that? Why would that be?
It's a theory of racial threat, basically, and that when people fear geographically, by the geographic presence of another, Hispanic or black in this case, that they switch to the right.
So how does the Democratic Party try to reconcile their pro-immigrant ideals with a liberal white base that feels racially threatened? Peter Beinart has some thoughts on that.
I don't think that Democrats have invested enough time, and I think they will need to in the run-up to 2020, in trying to find the right kind of language which emphasizes the benefits of immigration and is embracing of the humanity of immigrants and our need to treat people with dignity, but also responds to anxieties about national unity and anxieties about the strain, the fiscal strain that immigrants can create, especially in certain areas of the country.
So what could that language look like?
There have been some proposals, for instance, that we should levy a particular tax on industries like, let's say, the service industry or the agricultural industry that benefit massively from this very, very low wage, relatively low-skilled immigration, and then basically use that money to help those Americans who may be suffering economically as a result of immigration. That's the kind of discourse and policy that I think might better help Democrats both still support generous immigration policies, but also respond better to the anxieties they create.
Yeah. Though, Peter, especially in this Trump era, the issue seems to me to have been less about economic anxiety than what Trump talks about as crime, drugs, right? The idea that what immigrants are doing isn't simply taking your jobs, but they're bringing and importing violence and drugs.
Yes, which is not true. I mean, the, you know, one of the problems in some ways is that I think there are challenges that immigration brings. I think that one that Trump has created is almost entirely fictitious. I mean, yeah, sure, you can point to certain Central American gangs that exist, but there's really no good evidence that
I've
seen.
So why do you think he's doing this?
Because it scares people. And because I think especially in the post-9/11 era, there's been this kind of conflation of, you see it in the word border security, kind of the potential threat of violence and terrorism with concerns about immigrants. But I also think Trump is tapping into something deeper, which is the fear of a country that's no longer as cohesive as it was, which is appealing especially among some older white people who imagine the kind of, the America of the 1950s. We're not, and nor should we go back to the America of the 1950s. But I do think one of the things that Democrats can talk more about is the importance of integration and assimilation. And especially if immigrants learning English. Now, immigrants do want to learn English. There's no question about it. But there is some evidence that the rate at which immigrants to the United States are learning English has slowed for a variety of reasons. And I think that would be a really important issue for Democrats to focus on, to try to say we think that it's really crucially important that people who come to the United States learn English and learn English quickly. There's some social science data that suggests that hostility to immigration diminishes a bit as immigrants' English improves. And I think that we need to put more resources into that effort. And I think that would be a way for Democrats kind of to acknowledge some of the kind of anxieties that do exist, not all of which are completely racist and made up, but some of them do have to do with real concerns about how a country that is increasingly diverse, and diversity is a strength, but also maintains its basic unity, which is an old question in American history.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.